nobody wakes up in the morning and looks at themselves in the mirror and goes like, I'm really looking forward to being mediocre today. So there's so many manual steps that actually don't provide value. Why am I having to chase the trade to bring the keys back? Can't the systems do that for me? I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head. Like, nobody wants to be the bad cop that's always just calling up the person looking for, you know, hey, have you paid your rent again? What's going on with that? Effectively, every organization, you're going to have any level of resistance to change. I would say, like, don't fix a pain point in isolation of everything else, but you need to have specific goals. You know, being able to win the hearts and minds of your team to get them on board with the change is massively important.
So, Curtis Thompson, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
You've had a pretty interesting career to date, from your construction industry background to co-founding Simpro and scaling it across 38 countries. That's quite something. And now you're heading up our property after your firm Venture on Partners invested in them this year. And property management is an interesting space right now. It has all these obvious pain points around maintenance and trust accounting that everyone sort of accepts as, you know, the way things are. But coming from the outside of the industry, you're coming at it with fresh eyes. So I'm very keen to chat today about how you're thinking about automation, not just the surface level stuff that everyone's doing, but some of the deeper processes that actually free up property managers to do what matters. But before we like get into the deep depths of that, let's start right at the very beginning. Can you tell everyone a little bit about your career journey? How did you become so focused on solving these efficiency problems in property management?
Well, I think that started a long time ago, probably even way back when I was in construction. So I was looking after, you know, thousands of different properties in a defect liability scenario for a builder. I had a number of contractors and trades who were friends as well. I figured that like there's a big problem out there that can be solved with technology, and that sort of got me inspired to jump in there and do that. Started out in the industry that I knew well, in sort of trade service and contracting, and we sort of took an approach of pulling together lots of different disparate systems that contractors are using at the time with Simpro. So, you know, it was typical to use spreadsheets for estimating and accounting system for invoicing and something else for scheduling and something else for job management. There wasn't anything pulling all that stuff together. And so started by solving that problem. And then that took us on a journey around the world. Yeah, I had, probably 23 years I was in Simpro for, and as you sort of mentioned, 38 countries by the end of that. And then came out the other side and sort of exited that business. I really enjoyed the journey. And then on that process as well, like I've, you know, managed to be lucky enough to invest in a number of properties myself over a period of time. So worked with a lot of property managers over that period. And obviously property managers from the trade service and the contracting side of things as well. And just realized they're doing the same thing that we were doing. And they've got 5, 6, 7 different bits of software in their businesses, and they're all working crazy hours and struggling to make a profit. It's not the reason why any of us get in business. It's not the reason why any of us sort of get into the industry. So there's a really big opportunity for me to get in there and sort of bring a lot of that thinking to this industry as well and see how I could help. So that's why I'm here.
You've dived straight in the deep end with our property. There's some very high profile agencies using the software that have been using the software over the years. How has, working with them shaped your understanding of what our industry's core challenges are now?
So we have this sort of, you know, moving landscape of, you know, regulatory and compliance and legal sort of framework, which is adjusting the relationships, you know, between, you know, tenants and landlords. And I think that's, you know, posing a lot of problems. We're also looking to hit a construction target of 1.2 million homes by 2029, which, you know, if current trends stand and 35% of those are, you know, investments, and there's, you know, 400,000 new properties that we need to be managing. And in the next 5 years, we're also expecting a 17% drop in the workforce. So, you know, we've got 20% more properties to manage with 17% less people to do it. We've got these compliance and these goalposts that keep getting moved on us. I think some of that stuff is really, really important and really, you know, big core structural challenges that they're facing in our industry. Other things as well, like, you know, threats that weren't there in the past. So, you know, it seems to be a bit of a race to the bottom on price and management fees and that kind of stuff. So how do you find ways to differentiate yourself to say, I'm not just collecting rent and doing inspections, I'm actually helping you grow a portfolio? You know, the influence of buyer's agents, as well as they're sort of getting involved with investors, and then, you know, looking at getting incentives and kickbacks to refer them and sort of move those doors away, which those sorts of pressures we never used to have. So there's a lot of those, but I think some of those core challenges sort of really revolve around just the shifting landscape of where we're in and trying to keep up to date with that. And
I mean, the other thing is, coming into our property, you must have a vision for property management. Like, what do you see agencies doing differently in the future compared to, you know, what they might be doing today?
I guess in the technology industry, a number of years ago, made a promise, you know, to the world by saying, you know, we're going to make life easier, we're going to make life better. And in a lot of cases, you know, maybe we have in a siloed environment, but then we've sort of made things more complicated as well. And I think, you know, in the future, we kind of have this scenario where we have a lot more of a convergence of technology that's occurring. And so, you know, bringing together scenarios where, you know, you're using multiple platforms or you're trying to do that, I think that's getting in the way of a lot of people. Things like AI, maybe we can talk about that in a bit, but like AI no longer really being optional by having, if you're being forced to do more with less, you know, you're really being able to lean on technology to deliver on some of those promises. You know, things like staff retention and you know, staff happiness and that kind of stuff inside the business becomes more of a strategy rather than like an afterthought. And what, you know, how can we use technology to, you know, give people back the reasons why they're in this industry? Like, you know, do they want more time? Do they want to go fishing on Friday afternoon? Do they want to earn more and you know, provide more for their families? Do they want to leave behind a legacy? Like, those are sorts of some of the reasons why people kind of get into business, get into this industry. A lot of what we kind of have to do is sort of, you know, delivering on that. You know, compliance isn't easing. The landscape keeps moving. We're going to need to lean on more of this technology that is probably more advanced than a lot of people realize at this point.
One of the, you know, like you're talking about compliance there, and I guess one of the biggest areas of compliance in property management is with the trust account. And, you know, now we're seeing all sorts of different options popping up to help agencies be more compliant, or, you know, like create less risk, better sleep for business owners. Can you explain what our property's position is on this, you know, and how you're addressing that particular concern?
Well, from a philosophical perspective, our property approaches this problem quite differently to a lot of people that they kind of, I guess, traditionally used to. You know, essentially what happens is a trust account is kind of built into the platform. And so instead of being an external trust account where, you know, we have issues where there's potential issue or problems around manual reconciliation, you know, looking at, you know, where do payments go to? Were they for invoices? Were they for rent? You know, what was that payment for? Where did it come from? So, you know, there's the obvious human error around all that. And then there's the work that comes into trying to reconcile all of that work, a lot of those transactions. So we take a lot of that away from people. But that in turn also takes away, you know, a lot of that compliance overhead that they've got, a lot of the risks that they're carrying from either, you know, honest mistakes or, you know, unfortunately, the intentional ones as well. Now, automating a lot of those disbursements, automatically withholding funds, you know, to pay invoices for when they're due, you know, automatically dispersing to landlords, automatically sending out management fees, that kind of stuff. Like the stuff that is just, it's not necessarily adding value to the overall process of property management, but it's about like, how do we put the person into the workflow at the point that makes sense, as opposed to just the stuff that they have to do just because that's the way we've always done it and that's what you always have to do. So are you adding value to the conversation with the landlord right now? Are you adding value to the tenancy right now? Like, is this good for the customer? Is this good for the business? If that's no, why are you doing that? Like, we could be doing a lot of stuff around automating that. And the trust account piece is a really, really key part of that. So, you know, by taking on that compliance, and we then become, I guess, the licensee of the trust account itself. So we're the ones that get audited. That takes a lot of that risk and compliance off our customers, and the cost of that, the headaches of that, you know, the compliance, and it ends up being a really good outcome for a lot of our customers.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I've heard quite a few people talk about that. Let's elevate the property manager's role beyond, you know, what the technology can do. What are some of the things that you see in the future that the property manager will do versus what the technology will do?
It's a really good question. And I think it's one that you have to look at pretty honestly inside the business, because a lot of this involves sort of an element of change that could potentially that the business may need to undertake. And so if you take a look at all of the different processes that you have and work out what in there is adding value versus what are we doing just because I need to close that task off, or just because I need to send that email, or just because, you know, whatever, it's just a busy work task, then that may not necessarily be adding any value to the overall process. So it's about like, okay, we want to put the person in the loop where it adds value. So if you're having to talk to or phone a landlord, or talk to a tenant, go and do your inspection, like look at a piece of maintenance, work with a trade, those sorts of things. All that adds value to the to those relationships. And it's about the human relationships there. But if what you're doing is just reconciling payments that came into the trust account, or yeah, like I'm just having to close off all these tasks, or you know, manually send an email, or manually chase somebody up because they haven't signed their lease yet, or something like that. Like that's not really something that you know that you really want humans to be doing in a world where you've got to manage 20% more properties with 20% less staff, and nobody wakes up in the morning and looks at themselves in the mirror and goes like, I'm really looking forward to being mediocre today. Like I want to nail it is kind of what, you know, people generally wake up and do and go like, how can I bring it? And by taking away a lot of that stuff, it just keeps people busy. You can really put the person into the workflow point that makes a lot of sense for them. And there's a lot of tech around there that can actually support that. So.
Yeah. So seeing as you do come from the outside, do you ever get the feeling that, I mean, I think you basically said it, but I'm just sort of trying to summarize here, is that, you know, we're an industry that continues to do things because that's the way we've always done them. Like, you know, and sometimes, you know, like even if you say to someone, why are you doing things that way? As a, well, I don't know, we've always done it that way. How do you, like, you know, when everything is so templated and so it has been historically deliberately using your, I guess, your Silicon Valley kind of head, how do you bust people out of that?
I don't think that's necessarily a problem that's firewalled to our industry, to be fair. I think that's something that's just in human nature. Like I see it, I see it in businesses I've been involved with. You know, as one of the rules that I sort of put forward to, you know, my teams all the time. It's like if you're on the front line, you're doing this thing every day, right? If you can see a better way to do something, then you know, escalate it. Maybe there's a reason why we can't do it. Maybe because it ties into a grander process that actually maybe, you know, like you don't have visibility over. But a lot of the time, it's just we just keep doing it this way because it's just the way we've always done it. I was having a chat with a customer down in New South Wales yesterday, and they were saying exactly this. It's like, we can do it. The industry hasn't changed for 20 years. So we're actually trying to reconfigure our entire agency. They've got about 1,400 doors. You know, like we want to do things different, but we don't really know what we don't know yet. And so that's a great mindset to come to this in. You know, like, okay, we want to maybe kind of go task-based. We want to streamline things a little bit, but, you know. So I guess it's about honestly looking at the processes that you've got. What's adding value? What's not? What's repetitive? And then, you know, what can be optimized? And like, what systems are you currently got that you're currently using? Can you leverage off those better? Like, you might have implemented them 5 years ago. There potentially are things that they've built and they've developed in there that you haven't looked at. And so how can we use our existing tech stack more appropriately? Or if the tech stack hasn't kept up, what else is out there? Like, who else is doing what we want to do right now? Where can we go with that? But I don't think just being, you know, we've always done it this way is a firewall thing to this industry. Trust accounting is a great example of that. You know, we've always done trust accounting this way in this industry. Not necessarily the best way to do it, right? We've always done, you know, templated email. So why don't we look at, you know, building a behavioral model about how somebody in particular communicates? Instead of sending them a template, let's communicate at scale that's personalized to that person. So some of that stuff's much more effective.
Yeah, absolutely. And so our property works with different agencies of different sizes. And I think, you know, there's always been, you know, certainly at some of the property management conferences, you know, I've been to over the years, there seems to be, you know, sort of like your small, medium and large kind of rent rolls and very different structures within those businesses. Are you seeing a difference between how the smaller agencies and the larger agencies are approaching this age of AI and automation? And, you know, do you think there's things that they could learn from each other?
I think, I mean, the simple answer to that is yes. The smaller agencies typically aren't tied down to this is the way we've done it in our agency for a long time. It does tend to come down to the attitude of the person that's sort of starting starting their new agency and starting to build a rent roll. You know, you do definitely come across people that have been in the industry for 20 years, I've always done it like this, and I'm going to bring that mentality to my new agency. So, you know, there's that's still definitely out there, but it's a good opportunity. And a lot of people take the opportunity to say like, okay, I'm by myself, or I maybe got one or two other people in the business. I need to be able to manage 200-300 properties before I start increasing my overheads and start employing more people. How do I do that more effectively? And so you do have a lot of those startup agencies that will approach it from, I get to redesign my entire processes up front. The thing about it at the smaller end, though, it helps them initially, but they don't have the big bang that the larger agencies will get out of the same kind of thinking. So if you've got 1,500, 2,000, 3,000 properties under management, the impact to your team to look to try and automate all of this stuff and use AI is so much bigger. But you still get yourself stuck into that rut of we've done it this way for 15 years, 20 years, however long you've been around for. Changing is going to be hard. And I've got a lot of agents in this business. I've got a lot of people that used to doing it this way. They're used to reconciling the trust account. They're used to, having the system automatically send out that 3, 5, and 7 day arrears notice letters, and they just template it. And I want to put myself in the process at every point in time to make sure that I'm saying yes and sending off all those different bits of correspondence. And if you can get that smaller agency mindset into the larger agencies, and then they do adopt some of this stuff, the impact on those are huge. Like you might take an agency with say 20 property managers and go like, right, well, we can actually manage this portfolio with say 15 of you because we're able to automate so much of that stuff. There were five of you guys, the other five, what we actually do with you guys, because you're basically wasting away in this role, we're going to put you more over into this BDM space over here, for example. So we're going to use some AI to help you communicate at scale and prospect and help grow the rent roll. And over here, and so that's going to help, bring in new opportunity into the door. And so we're going to redeploy some of our workforce over here. And at the same time, over on our PM side, we're going to make sure that we give you like predictive algorithms, for example, to say, here are your top five landlords today that are at most risk of churn. Why don't you give these guys a call? And here's the reasons why, So you can fix the leaking bucket. You can really accelerate the number of opportunities. And because you've automated a lot of the donkey work, you can get done this with the same amount of property managers, with a lot less property managers, the same amount of doors. That helps you grow. So there's a lot of opportunities there. And I think there's a big opportunity for the larger agencies to learn from the smaller guys, specifically with how they approach that, how they think about it. So as a startup agency, I talk to people every week and they're like, oh, sweet. I don't want to set up a trust account. I don't want to have to hire people when I'm at 20 doors because I can't manage it anymore. So we'll help you through that startup phase, but the real efficiencies come, with scale.
I was going to say, it's super interesting what you just said, with landlords most at risk of churn. How does your algorithm, are you allowed to talk about this, or am I sort of asking, or am I asking trade secrets here?
So it's actually fairly simple when you sort of peel back the hood. So there's about 45 different touch points that you have with a landlord, right from initially from prospecting, so just signing up the MAA, all the advertising pieces that are going through, and then and emails that are coming through, and you can start building out behavioral models and as it relates to that particular landlord, doing a bit of a sentiment analysis, maybe get to that later on as well. But so there's all these different touch points of how you're doing things, and then at the end of that process, based on the entire database, that set of behaviors results in a churned landlord. So if we can take all of those and say we've recognized this pattern starting to occur, let's cut it off before it gets too far. Bang, here's your, and so you can throw up a simple score system, a scoreboard, and you say as soon as it goes red and you've got more than, 100 points, that have added up to going down this particular pattern, we can put that then in front of a property manager and say, this person needs a phone call. And it's because of these inspections are overdue, or something's going on with their arrears, or, they've logged onto the landlord portal and they've looked at this piece of maintenance 5 times. There's something going on with this that they haven't asked you about yet. So some of those sorts of things that you may not have insight into, but try for more. So, some of that kind of stuff is a lot of fun to play with. Landlord churn is a good one. PM churn is a good one as well. So how are people engaging with the platform? How are they communicating with tenants? And you can start to see a disengagement pattern as well. So if you're looking to maybe have a PM potentially churn shortly, maybe we should escalate that to something to say, can you re-engage with this person?
Yeah, that is super. I guess you've just touched on a point of intense interest for me anyway in this behavioral analysis, because, I've sort of been doing a fair bit in the AI space for the last couple of years, particularly in real estate. And that's something, we could have done it through automation, like incrementing numbers and things like that in the past. But, is that something that you're thinking about, sort of having AI have a hand in, being able to tell when your property manager is, say, just not that engaged anymore, or being able to tell what your landlord hasn't logged in so many days and they keep clicking on their balances? I'm just fascinated by this. What do they actually do that tells you?
Well, I mean, all those behaviors feed into those algorithms, and we're already doing that. The thing about when you start doing some of these, models is when you start doing the analysis on it, sometimes they'll throw out touch points and things you didn't even consider. Some of it are intuitive. So you go like, okay, for example, you've logged on and looked at the landlord, maintenance thing a number of times, or, maybe the number of emails that you've been sending is starting to drop off, something like that. So some of this stuff is fairly intuitive to work out how people are engaging, but some of it is a complete surprise. When you're building out those different algorithms and AIs to help drive that, like you look at it and you're like, wow, didn't see that coming. But when you start to cluster some of the results together, you're like, yep, there's a correlation there. That's something we need to take into account when we're building out those algorithms. And then when you train the model in the background and then present those results to users. I'm the same. I'm a techie as well at heart. So this kind of stuff sort of gets the engine fired up. But
yeah, what a time to be alive. Yeah. and in technology. So, okay, so let's talk about the second biggest, like after trust accounting, I think the second biggest pain point is probably maintenance still, in property management. So, what do you feel makes this area particularly challenging, and how are you addressing that at our property?
So there's a lot of moving. This is actually probably a good one that's nice and close to my heart, given I've come from that sort of tradie contracting space and construction. So there's a lot of moving parts when it comes to the maintenance side of the business. So you might be, it could be a simple maintenance request. And so how are all those different requests coming in? And people are taking phone calls, or you're getting emails. Can we be using an app to capture those things? Can we be looking for keywords in inbound emails and automatically setting up requests? So those are the sorts of things that we're doing with that. But typically you've got a lot of different sort of ways that these inbound requests are coming that you have to sort of manage. And then it could be 9 o'clock on Friday evening, and you've knocked off for the day, but this emergency piece of maintenance has come in and a water pipe has burst, and you've got to, you might have to take the call. So it's about like sort of capturing that information and then sort of being able to funnel those requests, and then work out, well, how do we personalize this service? Because again, that's another piece that sort of changes from one landlord to another. So somebody might say to you, I don't want to hear from you if the maintenance is anything less than $500. And so some of the things we could do is to say, all right, well, we know that it's a burst pipe. Burst pipes in this particular suburb should cost between $200 and $400 to fix. Let's let this one go straight through to the PM to approve, rather than having to go to the owner. Or it is after hours. Or another example might be, so we have like an Uber trade sort of scenario where as big emergency piece of work's coming and I need to farm it off to five different trades. Who's going to get the job? Who responds to it most? And who responds to it first? Bang, you get the job. Get out there and get it done. We'll let the other guys know that they didn't respond in time. And so the job's already been taken care of. Getting quotes. Maybe some landlords want a quote for every job. Maybe some landlords want three quotes for every job. So you've got to coordinate all the different trades and get different pricing and present it back to the landlord. You've got to communicate with them to get the prices. You then got to communicate with the landlord to get their approval on something. Maybe the landlord wants to go out there and do it themselves. So that's another moving part. Like everything is like, there's so many different branches that it can go on that, if you're going to try and do this at a level of scale, you need to either have really deep understanding about the relationship between you and the tenant and the landlord. Or if you're going to try and get any kind of scale out of this, you really need a system to be able to sort of work out what are those different relationships look like, what are those different rules for this particular scenario look like, and how do I automate as much of it as possible. So you only need to get involved at the tail end. But yeah, it could be heaps. There's a lot of the time, we even get like startup agencies, like they'll say, hey, we don't work with any trades in this area. How can you help us with that? So, we have this database of trades that works there, and we have all these feedback that come back from tenants. And so they've gone out, they've done a job. The tenant's given them feedback, given them a 5-star rating, said, this is great or whatever. Why am I having to chase the trade to bring the keys back? Can't the system just do that for me? Yeah. So there's a lot of those examples in the maintenance workflow that I think, can do with a really good tidy up.
Yeah. It sort of feels like it's got automation written all over that in some cases, like, mind you, I've disappeared in the rabbit hole of AI agents lately as well. So it's probably where I'm kind of thinking. But so we've sort of talked about trust accounts and we've talked about maintenance. Now we might as well go for, let's not leave it at 2 out of 3. Let's go for 3 out of 3. Let's talk about arrears management. How are you viewing arrears management? Because that is like, that could be a bit of an awful process as well. And, look, I know from my own, whenever I have to be the bad guy here at Elite Agent, no, that's not editorial enough, fix it. I'm a lot nicer, but you know, like it feels horrible. Like, you know, it can actually ruin my day sometimes, to be quite honest. So I can imagine that if I was a property manager chasing up arrears, it would probably ruin my day too. Like, you know, because I don't like being the bad guy. You might get tough to it, but how are you making that better for them?
Well, I think this is actually a really great example of where AI can help out a lot. You know, there's plenty of really strong, tangible examples of where AI and automation can help. And this is a particularly good one. I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head. Like, nobody wants to be the bad cop that's always just calling up the person looking for, you know, hey, you haven't paid your rent again? What's going on with that? Yeah, a lot of the time, again, I guess because of the way that we've sort of grown up in the industry, there are templates that we send. And so there's a 3-day email, there's a 5-day email, there's a 7-day thing, then we send a notice. So there's, you know, that's just kind of built into the cadence of kind of how we work. The way we sort of approach that is going, all right, those communications need to happen, and they need to happen at a certain time in order to make sure that we've hit some KPIs to be able to issue a notice if we need to go down that path. But let's have a look at how that person behaves. And let's actually use some AI to do some analysis on that. And then we'll craft a specific campaign for that person rather than I have a typical 5-day template that goes out. So we're going to look at their arrears history. We can look at their inspections history. We can look at all their communications. We can look at phone call logs. We can look at emails, SMS, that kind of stuff that are going through the platform and say, for this particular person, maybe they'll just respond better to some softer messaging, and we'll go out with a specific message that's crafted with softer messaging as an email up front. And then potentially we'll escalate that to an SMS. And then maybe we'll go out with a firmer email after that if they still haven't responded. Or maybe because of their communication style, let's just hit them hard with an SMS that's very firm upfront and have the system write that and send that. So you don't actually need to be the person that's sort of like feeling bad about doing all that chasing. At some point, though, when we're doing arrears chasing, a person should get involved. So, you know, we've sent a few messages, emails, SMS. It's time to make a phone call. So we go, right, there's my 3 arrears phone calls I need to make for today. Here's a script of what we think you should say, again, based on the way that they communicate. Here's everything we've already sent. So when you call them, say this in your own words, but roughly say this. It sort of takes away some of that fear. It's like, okay, cool, someone's guiding me through. We got an AI that's guiding me through the process to get the best outcome for this person. And it's like, not unusual, very, very common for us to go into businesses that have, or agencies that have sort of 6-7% sort of arrears over 7 days. That's pretty normal. Not out of the question. We've seen 14-15% in arrears as well. And then by implementing those sorts of automated approaches, it's within 2 to 3 months, we've typically got those down to under 1%. So, you know, there's some really powerful parts around that, which really help. And then, yeah, if it does come to and you do need to issue a notice for whatever reason, then why don't we automatically generate the notice and just say, right, ready to send that, you hit the button. But we'll generate it when we've made sure that all the preceding steps have been done properly.
Every agency handles that whole arrears management process differently, but it is, I guess, comforting sometimes that the AI can tell you, or, you know, even the system can tell you exactly what to say, because, you know, different people react differently to different ways of doing things. I mean, for example, you know, my husband likes to write long emails, and then he says, did you read my email? And I go, yeah, I skimmed it, because I'm a skimmer, not a soaker. You know, so I guess, you know, like getting to that, you know, the guts of that personalization thing, how far are we away from that?
Well, we're doing it. I mean, the technology is already doing that. So I think a lot of your listeners probably be familiar with something like Reader. It's doing a lot of that sort of personalization. You know, there are systems you can phone up and, for example, you might call up and an AI will answer the phone call and book in that hairdresser appointment for you, or book in that plumbing job to come out there and fix it up. And next time you call, they'll say, hey, Curtis, how's that new hot water system going? So it's very personalized, way more than a person could be, an individual could be. But yeah, in terms of this kind of stuff with arrears, like this is really powerful stuff. And, we're doing it at the moment, and I know some others are as well. So my communication style might work in a certain way and resonate with people that communicate the same way that I do, but somebody else might be completely different. And if I communicate in my style, it may not hit home quite right with that person. And so we're not going to get the best outcome from that person. And so, you know, like you said as well, I don't like being bad cop all day, every day, and making horrible phone calls. I prefer to call people with good news and bad news. And so a machine can, you know, an AI is really, really well placed to doing a task like that. People will be surprised about how far technology has come in things like this, and its ability to be able to pick up some of these, a lot of these nuances that an individual is never really going to be able to do that and help you communicate in a personalized way at scale.
Well, the other thing that I guess is interesting too, something that we're looking at in our business, particularly like we get a lot of email, we get a lot of press releases like incoming with, and it could be anything from just a Google alert to something which is just, you know, promo fluff to, you know, someone's wants a backlink to, you know, like there's all these different things that come into it, like, you know, any business. And we've been playing with these systems now that will triage these emails according to, that's from one of your clients, you should prioritize that. This one's from, you know, a reader who, you know, wants to make a comment or a fuss or something, you know, that should go through to the head person, you know, like that sort of thing. Like that's, I guess that's where my head's at in our business, because, you know, I'd rather be dealing with the things that will upset my team more than like just handing them through. And it seems to me that in property management, like you could get an email from a landlord or a tenant that's, you know, DEFCON 11, Cuba, about to, you know, sort of missiles about to go off or something like that, versus, you know, something which is just, oh, hey, just checking in to see what this is. To me, that would be a really good application in property management. So like, how are you thinking about that?
Quite often, you know, when you do a sentiment analysis on an inbound email, you can quite quickly tell the mood of a person. When you're doing the analysis on there as well, it's quite easy to pick up on the content of email and sort of contextualize it. So, for example, we have an email that's come in and it's about maintenance. Based on the email based on the wording they've said there, there's somebody that's really freaking out about something that's occurred. So potentially this is a piece of emergency maintenance. So why don't we pick up that email and automatically create the maintenance request and make it emergency for you to go in there and have it. So then it's going to start coming up red and flashing lights all over the place and say, this is something you need to look at pretty quickly. But something that's just come in and says like, oh, hey, I was talking to the neighbor's dog yesterday and like, it's a really nice place to live. Thanks for having us. It's like, maybe we don't need to escalate that into a specific task, but you know, it's still something that we can get to, and so we want to make sure that that's there to respond to, but it's not necessarily related to a part of the process, like maintenance or arrears or, you know, viewings or leases or whatever, which we can take that inbound content and have it feed into those particular areas of the business. So, now, agencies will structure themselves in a number of different ways. Again, you could be a task-based agency, you could be a pod-based agency, you could be a portfolio-based agency. And so in regardless of those different sort of scenarios, when you're bringing this content and you go, okay, this is the mood of the person and this is the content that's in there, let's put it in front of the right person at the right time. And then we'll also use this to inform, like, you know, behavioral models. We're going to use this to inform, you know, the landlord churn prediction algorithm that we spoke about. We'll use this to say, hey, these are the people you need to call because this email's come in and they're really pissed off. So yeah, a lot of that's, yeah, that's really, it's pretty impressive, some of the stuff that happens there.
Yeah, amazing. I think I said it before, what a time to be alive. Like,
oh, absolutely. You know, anybody that's talked to ChatGPT as well will know, like I said, you can ask it a question, put all sorts of different, you know, context into that conversation. It, you know, you see how the technology works in a very tangible, easy to access way there. And it says, right, this is what you're asking about. This is how I'm going to respond to you. And then it'll also like respond to mood. So.
Yeah. Like the things that we've got access to now are just incredible. But let's just say I'm a property management agency owner and I'm listening to this and I've been sort of thinking about updating my operations, but I'm also thinking at the same time, God, you know, changing everything. I've just changed something. It's too hard. Nobody's going to want to change anything. What would you want them to know about the first steps in their journey?
For me personally, this is probably a bit of a challenge because I am an advocate of, you know, improvement and change. When I come across this particular piece of resistance, whilst I've been slapped in the face with it often enough to know that I need to pay attention to this, it's something that, you know, I've always kind of, you know, struggled with a little bit. But effectively, everybody in every organization, you're going to have any level of resistance to change. And you know, I've had it now multiple times in different businesses where I've just changed the email client on people. They're like, what? So, you know, it's about like, I guess, having a genuine curiosity and staying involved and informed about what that change could potentially be, but not being fearful of it, right? So the only constant is change, as the phrase goes. When you're looking at it from a tangible perspective, it's like, okay, well, what's the outcome that I want to achieve here? What are we actually trying to do with, you know, in the business? And then go like, well, have we got repetitive tasks that are standing in the way here that we could potentially sort of do away with or automate? You know, have we got a growth thing? Have we got a growth goal that we want to achieve? And what systems can we use to help with that? Have we got a churn problem that we're trying to fix up? Have we got, like, you know, have we got multiple data entry mistakes happening because I've got to put the thing in five times into different systems? So, like, I've got to put it into the leasing document, and I've got to put it into my CRM, and then I've got to put it into my trust accounting system, and I've got to, all these, like, as an example. So what is it you're trying to actually achieve? And then go about setting, for that outcome and finding a solution that can help that, or talk to other people that have already achieved that as well. I want to add a story to this in just a second. The other piece of advice I normally give people at this point is pick somebody in the business that's really busy, because they don't have time to muck around with it, right? So, yep, this is a problem. We're trying to fix this. This is a huge bottleneck in our business. I know this bottleneck really intimately, and I don't have time to fuff about. Like, there it is. Let's go find a solution that's going to fix that and get it in. Because they're, if you find, generally, a lot of people will bring in, people external to look at it, and they might put together depending on the size of the business, you might get this, this gap analysis done and all that fun stuff, and it just slows everything down. That would be one piece of advice I'd give some people as well.
But I think what you're saying there is just pick one problem, or pick one pain point, focus on that, nail that, and that'll bring a heap of benefits in and of itself.
Yes, yeah, I can see how you got that. I would say, don't fix a pain point in isolation of everything else, but you need to have specific goals. So sometimes to fix a particular pain point, it might be a part of an overall picture. So you need to take the overall picture into account, but set for yourself some specific goals as part of, I'm implementing this change because of these are the outcomes I'm trying to achieve. The danger here is that you might go and find yourself another point solution, which solves that one little problem, but then does it in isolation or as a silo across everything. So it's like, consider the overall approach, consider the overall scenario that you're trying to solve for, but do have some tangible outcomes of what you want. Like at the back end of this, this is why we've done this, and these are the outcomes that we should be able to achieve. I would also say that, this is something that I would say to startups as well, is like, you're building a system now, you've got 20 properties under management. You've told me you want 1,500 under management within a few years. Build your systems for 1,500 under management now, right? So that you don't have to get halfway through this process and then you've got to start pulling things out because they're not working and you've outgrown them. Like, think about where the end game is. But if you're already at 1,500 and you're trying to get to 2,000 or whatever, all right, cool. What systems do I need to get to 2,000? But also, these three things are really big problems for us, and I want to make sure that we specifically address those three things. Yeah, and people, when you're trying to win the hearts and minds of your team, you're trying to say to them, hey, we're implementing some change. Here's why. It's having a good story around what we're actually trying to fix, why we're going through this, what the outcomes are going to be, and then be able to measure them. But being able to win the hearts and minds of your team to get them on board with the change is massively important. So many people sort of underestimate the importance of that. You get 2 months into the process, and all of a sudden somebody in the back room is storming because they haven't been, they haven't been involved, and all of a sudden this new system's been dropped in their desk and they're expected to adopt it, and they're, why is that button blue instead of green? Why is it on the right hand side instead of the left hand side? I'm used to using the spreadsheet. So, winning your team, getting your team on board with tangible, here's why your lives are going to be better, here's why the business is going to be better, it's very important.
So what's your biggest goal for our property, and even for the industry for the next 12 to 18 months?
Oh, that's a big question.
just one goal, now that we've sort of been through that whole, just pick one thing.
I would like to have people remember why they're here in the first place. So, we're so busy, caught up doing the day-to-day. We've talked about it a few times, but the day-to-day of I just do it this way because that's the way I've always done it. I'm busy closing off tasks and sending emails and sending reminders because that's the way we've always done it. I'm busy reconciling payments because that's what the job entitles. That's what we need to do. But a lot of us have lost sight of why we're here in the first place. What outcome are you looking for? What outcome? Well, do you want to improve your community? Do you want more freedom in your life? Do you want to grow something for your family? Do you want more? Is it wealth you're chasing? What is it? And refocus. Let's refocus on that. And then say, well, what do we need to help support us in achieving that? As opposed to just getting lost in, this is the way it's always worked and this is the way it works and let's just keep doing it that way. I think if we can have a good, honest conversation industry-wide around getting us back to our reason why, and then saying, honestly, where are we and where do we want to be and what's the gap? Let's look at that.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you for spending the time with me and for sharing some of your wisdom, with me and with our listeners and all the rest of it. There's always one question I ask at the end of every podcast, and that is, beyond that goal of yours, which you just gave us, if there was one thing that you'd like everyone to remember from this, what would it be?
I'd say the one thing to remember would be that, like, I think technology has advanced probably further than you realize that it has, and that the business that you want is within reach. You know, the outcomes that you're after are definitely achievable. And, you know, just get out there and have a look at the different solutions that are out there, because you'll probably be surprised.
That's good advice. Curtis Thompson, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.